You have photographed some pretty famous people. You've traveled to some pretty interesting places.
I want someone to open a magazine and be like, hang on a minute. Oh God, that's her. Wow. Creativity is this muscle with which we can flex, and we do need to flex it.
What do you think they are looking for in that process? Is it just this guy knows what he's doing, or is there something else that puts them at ease?
I think it's super important for me to have, and for all creatives, to just have all the resources right with them. I think that comes with experience, doesn't it? Knowing what your strengths are and accepting those and living with those and being happy to vocalize those.
What do you think is the future of the photography industry in relation to AI?
I think where AI will be really prevalent will be
Angelina Jolie, Keira Knightley, Drew Barrymore, Dua Lipa, and Ricky Gervais are just some of the people that this week's guest has photographed. In this episode, I'm speaking with Dan Kennedy, who's a London-based portrait and fashion photographer that's worked with some of the most iconic names in the world. I actually had the privilege of spending a week snowboarding in the Italian Alps with Dan recently, and we had some really interesting conversations. So I thought I would give you a bit of an insight into those conversations so you can be a fly on the wall. And in this episode, we talk about the importance of having and knowing your process, the importance of research, and Dan shares some incredible stories about his photo shoots and meeting these celebrities, which I know you're going to find fascinating. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend and hit the subscribe button. Dan, welcome to the Creative Courage podcast. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thanks for having me.
You have photographed some pretty famous people. You've traveled to some pretty interesting places. And anyone who follows your Instagram account, I think, will be very jealous of your life. I'm curious, what's been the hardest part about getting to where you're at in your career today?
Having the confidence to keep going, knowing that I am a creative and knowing that I can be creative at the drop of a hat. Sometimes you doubt that, I think, as a creative. What I do is it's super competitive. I've got people on my coattails the whole time. Styles of photography change the whole time. Picture editors come in and out of their posts and chop and change and bring their friends in and commission those. So I'm in a very competitive space. And I think the hardest thing is to realize that I am always creative and I can always pull something out at the drop of a hat, which I have to do regularly. You know, sometimes that takes a bit of magic dust, a lot of planning, and a tiny bit of luck as well. And those things often for me will result in a great kind of creative result.
And how important do you think that creative result is in differentiating yourself from those people that are on your coattails?
Yeah, it's super important. I need to be bringing something to the table that's different, dynamic, interesting, maybe slightly unusual. So it's important. I'm either using new bits of kit or my picture research or my tenacity on the day has resulted in me saying, hey, do you know what, to the talent, just come outside. There's this epic kind of rose bush right at the back of the garden. Come with me down there and I'm going to get you to reverse into that rose bush so you're covered with the roses all around you. And you don't know it yet, but I'm going to make you look up and laugh towards the sky. And that's going to make an awesome shot. So it's those kind of moments that are going to make a result that is hopefully going to be, well, it will be unique, but hopefully will stand out and make a big impact. And hopefully that's the reason that I get booked again to do another job for that publication or client.
Yeah, amazing. Because I think like so many people don't see what really goes on behind the scenes. And I remember just for people's context, we were skiing together a few weeks ago, and Daniel Priestley told me something cool, which was he said that often when you're trying to get an authentic smile from people, you get them to get a photo of their children and look at that photo of their children and just kind of imagine being with their kids and then look at the camera straight afterwards, and you get this really sort of genuine, authentic smile from people, right?
Yeah, that's like one of many tricks in the bag, I guess. I mean, people often say to me, oh, wow, you know, do you get starstruck in front of celebrities? Do you get uncomfortable? You know, are you ever like, oh God, I loved you in that play or that production or whatever? And the answer is actually no, really, I guess, because two or three times a week, I'm amongst people that for many people would be, you know, kind of like a once in a lifetime kind of opportunity. And I just go sort of into this zone, really, where I'm using some recent creative research. So I'll always do quite a lot of research the night before a shoot, looking at different ideas, checking the talent to see what they're like these days. Maybe they shaved their head, maybe they've dyed their hair. All of these things will have an impact into what I end up kind of producing that day. So, and then it's my job to kind of put them at ease as well, really. They want to know often within a few seconds of walking into the studio, they'll be slightly on edge and they'll be sussing out what's happening. And one thing I normally do is just immediately say, hey, nice to see you. Great. Okay, so look, we're going to do shot one on the red sofa, shot two is going to be lying down on this black material that we've got, and shot three is on the roof, and you're going to be out of here in about 45 minutes. Does that sound okay? And at that point, I see their shoulders often go down because they think, oh, okay, this guy's in control. He's got a plan. He sounds like he's in the driving seat. And that nearly always nets a much better result for me. And I've learned that over the years, you know, that being one of many tactics to sort of put them at ease with the sole view of me getting a better result, you know?
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, because we often talk to other creative business owners about the importance of doing exactly that, but for clients, because, you know, it's a little bit like if you're going to go and have an operation, the doctor will always tell you like what's going to happen and what to expect and what the recovery process is like. If you just went in there blind, it would be so anxiety provoking, right? And so I find that strategy very, very interesting. And I guess my question off the back of that is, what do you think they are looking for in that process? Is it just this guy knows what he's doing, or is there something else that puts them at ease?
Yeah, I think it's confidence most of the time. If they walk in and I'm like, hey, great to see you. You know, God, I loved you in last night's episode. That's in some ways to them, that's maybe the first little, it's not a black mark, but you know, that will make them doubt. And then secondly, the worst thing I could do would be like, okay, so I've got a couple of ideas. We haven't totally locked them down yet, but I was wondering maybe about doing something with the window and that, forget it. You've probably lost them, and you know, they might let an internal sigh out, or their eyes might roll towards the ceiling, and then they might start to lock up. So them looking at looking at me thinking, he doesn't really give a monkey's who I am, whether I'm Bono or whether I'm Lady Gaga or whatever, he's obviously just got a plan. That is, you know, moves me forward mountains worth of, you know, space closer to where I need to be with them. So that's what happens then. It's the control. I think it's exuding control. Sometimes maybe I haven't even nailed it. Maybe it's really windy upstairs on the roof. And I'm like, great, shot one's on the sofa, shot two's lying down on the black material, and shot three, we're going to be up on the roof. Maybe at that point I'm thinking, God, it's really windy and I don't know if the roof's going to work, but maybe I've realized there's some corrugated material against the wall in the basement, and actually that's my fallback shot. So I might swap out the roof for the corrugated shot in the basement at the last minute. They don't know that though, because I've delivered it with full confidence, you know? So I think that's the most important bit.
And where did you learn that? Where did you learn how to do that?
I learned that a trial and error, and making the mistake of going, yeah, I've got a couple of ideas. We might go for red, but I'm not sure. What do you think? And then realizing that they will almost eat me for breakfast and be like, well, you know, I've got to be out of here pretty soon, so I don't care what you do, but you know, I've got maybe 40 minutes max. And it's often the publicist or the team around the celebrity that will step in at that point and be like, oh God, is this guy a bit wishy-washy? Has he not got a firm plan? So I always do a shot list, like a PDF shot list that I have with me stuck onto a pole that's right next to where I'm shooting, so I can constantly refer to that. And you know, sometimes all good intentions go to shit as well. So I might have, you know, shot one on the red sofa, shot two against the peely paint doors, shot three upstairs on the roof, and shot four with some smoke bombs in the studio. And sometimes I might actually go, God, the sun's just come out. And I'm like, hey, we're just ready to do shot one on the sofa. Just before we do, Peter or Susan, come with me. Let's just go outside. There's this alleyway and I just want to walk down there. And I get them walking down the alleyway, no flash, no lighting, no one else. I don't let anyone else come. I just say, just walk towards me and laugh a bit and goof around. And sometimes that could be the whole shoot. We get three great shots, and that shot one is the cover. Shot two, they sit down on the pavement pavement, leaning against the wall and look up to the sky and look a bit kind of happy. And maybe there were just some moments then when there wasn't a whole entourage and we just got some magic that happened there. And I do take them inside and I do photograph them on the red sofa. And that for some reason looks a bit stilted because there's 20 people looking around at a monitor and they're feeling a bit uncomfortable. So I always have that in my head as well. I was taught when I think I was 20 years old, get the safe shot first and then play. So I always have that in my head, but sometimes I even switch it round. I might just be like, let's play first because I've been doing this long enough to know if I'm going to get you walking down the street, I'll get something. I wouldn't suggest it otherwise. So sometimes creativity can come out of nowhere and a split second decision can result in something really beautiful and powerful and real and maybe a bit more relaxed than this kind of convoluted shot list that you went into the shoot having, you know?
It sounds to me like the balance of planning and creativity is really, really important. I'm just wondering, how do you manage that dynamic? You just gave us a few examples there, but do you ever have a point where the whole plan just goes out the window, or is it important for those things to always work in unison?
Yeah, I think it's really important that little shot list of four things is gonna work. So I've done my lighting order and I've got those lights in. I've briefed my team and the assistants are setting up the lights for those setups. And then maybe the magic, you know, might happen. You know, maybe there's a garden and we just go outside in the garden and they didn't mow the lawn and the grass is long. And I just say, lie down there for a minute in the grass. And they're like, really? I'm like, just do it. And I get a step ladder and put it up and stand over the top of them looking down and they've got their hands behind their head and they just look blissfully happy. And that's just a free moment that happens. So yeah, you know, maybe I've stolen that moment, but it's really important that I know confidently that shot list is going to work. And I do, I wouldn't put anything on it that's not going to work. So when I'm building that shot list, let's say that shot one's against an old painted wall that's inside a studio, I'll be like, okay, first question I ask is, how can I make this great? And I look at the peeling paint on the wall on the website of the studio. And I think that's cool, but I think I can make it better by dropping a shard of light onto them. Let's drop like a shard of light and let the edges go dark. That's going to make it more powerful than have it kind of just sort of flat lit. So I'll order the lighting attachment that makes this amazing shard and that'll be shot one. And I know that works. I've used the shard attachment before. I've probably done that as a version of that shot before somewhere else and thought, wow, that's quite a lot of impact when there's just this kind of pool shard of light that comes across them. So that shot list I'm building, I've got full confidence it's going to work. In case they say outside in the grass, you're joking. No way. He won't go outside. He can't catch a cold. He's on tour in the US starting tomorrow. No way. It's inside only. Okay, cool. No worries. You know, we're straight onto the shard shot and we know we're going to nail that.
How do you plan shots without having seen the person and seen where you're shooting?
I'll give you a little example of the sort of thing that can happen. So Hollywood Reporter in the US called and said, look, listen, we've got 20 minutes with Dua Lipa, you know, the singer. It's going to be in the record company offices, which are in Soho. So I Google Street viewed the offices and they're on a tiny street and I'm looking around at the textures of the walls on the fronts and the alleyways around the offices. And then I managed to see some pictures of inside the office and it's pretty awful. It's a plastic plant and a grey kind of recycling bin. And I think, you know, this is someone who is going to look pretty impactful on camera. She's going places. And also I want to get some great creative shots. So what I do in that scenario is I have two folders on my desktop. One's called a reference folder and the other one's called a locations folder. And the reference folder's got a whole manner of creative visual references in. And I dip into that to build my shot list from that. So there's all crazy things. There's some pixels in that reference folder. It's just some zoomed in at 300-500% red and green pixels. And there's something about the shade of the red and the green. And that's why I put it in that reference folder. And I might have the green made as some staging flats in the background. And I might show the red to the stylist and say, get an amazing dress that's as near to the tone, this tone of red as possible. And maybe that's the creative element that I'll take from that. There's another shot in there that's a dust sheet falling in black and white, just like a, you know, £1.50, $2 dust sheet from like and Q, you know, someone's got hold of it and they've got one light pointing down from the ceiling and they've opened up the dust sheet, shaken it, and they've just let go of the dust sheet and it's gently fallen. And as it's fallen, this really mundane, boring, uncreative piece of plastic has become this sort of beautiful cloud-like sort of art object. So that's why that's in there. I've got rainy streets with neon lights reflected in them. And so that's where I go to get my creativity. So in that example, the Dua Lipa scenario, I thought, this ain't going to work for me. A plastic plant against a grey wall and a recycling bin. So I went into my locations folder and I remembered there was a brilliant location called Dalston Heights, which was probably 20 minutes in a cab from the record company offices. Now in that location, there's a broken fighter pilot seat. There's a set of four cinema seats in old deep red velour. There's some weird palm tree wallpaper. So there's loads of creative corners with which I knew I would be able to get some great shots. So I sold in the idea of moving it from the record company offices to Dalston Heights, and reluctantly they went for it. And it ended up making some really great creative shots. So I gave myself it wasn't an easy win, but I made that a win by moving the location from somewhere mundane to somewhere really creative. And I've learned that the hard way. You know, now I would always push to do that. So I'd use the reference folder to come up with some brilliant ideas and use the locations folder to potentially sell in a different location if I think it's going to elevate the photo shoot, you know?
That's so interesting. I think what I'm picking up from this conversation from a broader context is that there's two very important pieces here. The first one is having a very clear process that you take everyone through and are having a very clear process in which your case is the kind of the shots. But then also the second piece is research, the importance of actually knowing what you're going into. Like hearing you talk about looking on Google Maps and seeing the textures of the wall and all of that stuff, it's clear that this isn't just something that you're sort of winging when someone says, hey, we've got Dua Lipa for 20 minutes. You're like, oh, I'll just go and make something happen. You're actually spending significant time before that shoot, researching, and then you've got your process that you know is sort of fail-proof to fall back on. Would that sort of be fair to say?
Totally fair to say, yeah. And I'm looking at various things in my arsenal to be able to bring out some really creative things. I keep all various textures of material and hand-painted backgrounds. I keep kind of in stock, and I would travel to a shoot with some of those. You know, I when I shot Keira Knightley, I just said, just stop for 1 minute in a really boring corridor. And I got my assistant to hold a piece of black velvet directly behind her, and that removed her from the environment. And black velvet soaks up all light, every ounce of light gets soaked up, so you get a beautiful, really deep black. And I just did a really striking portrait of her. She barely stopped moving because there was just so little time. So I'm always thinking, you know, is the black velvet packed? Is there a hand-painted background packed? What lighting attachments have I got which will make things look interesting? You know, I photographed former Prime Minister Theresa May in the summer of last year, and I took her into her garden and there were no redeeming features in the garden. I was like, God, give me a rose bush, or give me a, you know, give me a peely paint wall, or give me a beautiful little avenue with some begonias, or I don't know, flower types, but you get me, you know. And there was nothing. So in the end, I stuck her between two big conifer trees, but I used my shard of light again, my attachment that puts like just a shard of light down. And we underexposed the daylight and really pumped up the flash that was producing this shard of light. And that just made something a bit interesting. She was really uncomfortable in the camera. She just wanted it to be over. So yeah, I sometimes think of it as sort of footballer tactics, I used to call it, which is where you were photographing a premiership footballer and they literally turn up, stand on at the spot marked X, and they're like, okay, where do you want me? And they will bring almost nothing to the table. You need to be bringing smoke machines and colored gels and bring all the whizzes and bangs, because, you know, more often than not, you know, premiership footballers will just stand there and, you know, they'll just only do whatever you tell them to do. So sometimes you need to bring the kitchen sink, you know, and have it sort of ready. And other times just a little walk, you know, down the farm track opposite might result in, you know, an old oak tree that's, you know, that was caught alight once and it's all burnt out, and you could stand them inside the burnt out trunk, and my God, the daylight in there is beautiful, and suddenly you've got an amazing cover for the New York Times magazine or whatever it might be. So we're mixing spontaneity with a hell of a lot of pre-planning, I think. Yeah, that's what we're doing here, and letting the magic just happen as well, you know.
Yeah, and that's so important, right? Because I think I know from my personal experience that creativity can be perceived as purely spontaneous, but I think actually speaking to some of the people who are at the top of their field like yourself, it's spontaneity is, like you said, the magic dust, but it only works if it's backed up with all of these things that we've been talking about around the research, the tools, the process, everything else.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. You've totally summed it up. It is. I'm turning up to a shoot. You know, I will always research what's going on with someone's hair, because often I might instruct the hairstylist to change their hair a bit. So if it's, someone that's had their hair cut recently, or maybe they'll be always photographed with their hair done in the same way. And I'll be like, oh, okay, let's change that. Let's put the wind machine on it. Let's let the hair down. You always seem to have your hair up. And I only know that because I will have done hours worth of Google image research the night before to see, God, you're always photographed in this certain way with your hair done certainly like this. Can we change it? Can we, you know, I want someone to open a magazine and be like, hang on a minute. Oh God, that's her. Wow. God, she looks different there. She looks unusual. You know, I'll often say to the stylist, is there a coat you're bringing? Is there something with a big collar? Have you got a top with a bow on it? Because if I go in to do quite a dramatic headshot, I want some textures in there. You know, maybe I'm going to get them to hide behind a big collar of a coat, so you only see sort of just their eyes and the top of their nose. So, you know, just to make something a bit more interesting. So yeah, I'm looking at ways to maximize on the creativity. Likewise, you can get, you know, I photographed someone a month ago who's a TV presenter, and she was in a great mood. She loved the music that was playing in the studio, and she was just dancing around, and I started almost dancing along with her, and just, you know, she was moving her hands around and laughing her head off, and it was free and real, and she was having such a great time, and it was all unscripted, and it shows in the pictures. They're just full of joy. So sometimes you can get that, you know, and then sometimes you can get, you know, he's gluten-free, he's a stickler for timing, you must be there 10 minutes early, and can you make sure that there's a certain area for him that's private also, and he doesn't like to wear anything with patterns, you know, and you're looking through this list of prerequisites, and then the publicist turns up and's like, look, listen, he's not in a great mood today. You know, you've got all of that research that we've previously spoken about, all that stacked up, ready to go. You've got all your ducks in the row, and then you can't be wobbled at that point. You're like, okay, so he seems to be really demanding. He's really particular about his food. He seems to want to be private, and it's, God, I'm getting the vibe he doesn't really want to be here. You know, I have to let that wash over me like water off a duck's back. And then when the door opens and he comes in, I'm like, hey, great to see you. Okay, we're going to have a really good 45 minutes together. This is my plan. Let's make some cool shots and, you know, let's do this. So definitely need to be armed with all my arsenal of backgrounds and lighting attachments and intention and my knowledge of the local area. You know, maybe he's flown in from the US and maybe we're in Dalston in East London, and actually him walking down the street past a diner, you know, with some English street signs around the side would actually be a brilliant shot, you know, and I've done that kind of thing many a time just to be able to pull something a bit different out of the bag, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I've heard you say before, Dan, is that you believe creativity is a little bit like a muscle and it needs to be exercised regularly. What are some of the things that you do to exercise that creativity?
The reference folder. I mentor a few photographers, and that's something that I really drum into them. I say, hey, listen, you know, you could knock on, you know, Sue's door, your next door neighbor, and say, can I photograph little Timmy against a bed sheet in your garden in daylight? Oh yeah, sure. Come in. No worries. You know, could you do it? Yeah. Is it easy to do? Yeah. It's pretty straightforward. Okay, cool. Well, where is it that you live? Oh, you live in Croydon in South London in the UK. Great. Okay, well, could we get a model in a dress made of feathers, and could we get her looking like she's crying, and could we shoot at night, and could we use rain machines to make the streets wet? We get her into some cool shapes. You know, would that look better than the picture of little Timmy against a bedsheet in Sue's garden next door? Well, yeah, it probably would do. So creativity is this muscle with which we can flex, and we do need to flex it. I know you're not necessarily a photographer per se, Matt, but I could say to you, I'm going to send you to Lisbon today. There's a flight at 2:00, and I want you to take a picture of a fisherman as the light goes down on the beach just outside Lisbon. You'd be like, oh God, well, I don't know if I can get that. Well, no worries. The flight's going, Matt. It's 69 euros. We can get you there. Oh God, I just don't know whether, you know, it's a big ask, and, you know, I might not find a fisherman. Just get over there and do it. And I think if I told you to do that, I reckon you would come back with a picture of a fisherman at dusk. And if actually you were a photographer about to become professional, or just, you know, starting your foray into professional photography, I think you'd really try hard. You'd take a little portable flash with you, and you'd probably get a great shot shot of some craggy fisherman with a deep blue sky behind us. The light's gone down and maybe he's got the nets on his shoulder. So, you know, you could photograph a, you know, one of your art school mates next to a tree with textural bark, you know, in your local town, or you could just jump on a Ryanair flight and go to Lisbon and make some real magic happen. So I guess I'm just making the point that we need to push ourselves, and I need to do that myself as well. So I have a diary entry every month that says creative tech research. And that's just to make sure that I'm looking at all of the tech to, you know, what's the latest attachment? Are there some strange lights where we can change the colors coming out? You know, could we bathe someone in some red light at dusk in some marshland? If so, how do we do that? Oh God, I see there's these new weird strip lights that have come out. Right, I'm going to use those. I'm going to make some magic happen. There's one picture in my reference folder, and it's from a shoot by an amazing photographer called Mikael Jansson. And I've studied it for years, and it's shot in LA. And it's, I've decided, I think I've worked out that it's, the models are lit by assistants holding pieces of mirror, and they're reflecting the sun back onto the model's face, just like you used to catch the sun glinting in your watch when you were a kid and probably shine it in the teacher's eyes to annoy him. And this shoot is just magical the way it's lit. So that's in my reference folder. I haven't actually done that yet, but it's in there, and I will use mirrors. I won't rob that idea, but I'll borrow mirrors and I'll weave those into a shoot for a magazine cover, and I'll shine some bright light into some mirrors and glint that back onto the face of a celebrity to help make me get a shot that's even more creative. So that's how I'm always thinking about creativity and pushing it, because I need to, because everyone else on my coattails is pushing the envelope too. And that's what it's about, waking up in the morning and seeing that magazine cover or that book cover and thinking, God, yeah, that's great. And people saying, oh my God, on Instagram, I just love this cover. That's amazing. God, it's awesome. You know, that's a feeling you just can't buy, you know?
And is that the sort of stuff that drives you?
Totally. I think that's what drives many creatives. And I think that's what you're doing it for. You're, you know, sometimes it's undescribable, the incoming pressure from different angles. Maybe it's outside and it's now raining. Maybe some of the lighting didn't turn up. Maybe the talent's got a real frown on. Maybe your assistant went to the wrong studio, you know, and just something has to sort of go right, you know. And sometimes I find myself just pushing through and making sure that we get something out of it. Well, let's make do and mend, and, you know, let's go and buy some pieces of artboard from the art shop around the corner for 10 minutes and delay the shoot by half an hour and use those pieces of neon paper as a background. And yes, we got a cover out of it. You know, it's sort of like, I don't think it's doing it for the punching the air. Yes, for the win. It's just for the striving to be creative.
It's like the satisfaction of like getting it in spite of all the things that went wrong.
Yeah. And not wanting to, that's not the only reason. I think it's just because, you know, I guess I feel I'm put on this planet to be creative. So I always want to get a creative result. The worst outcome for me is that I look at something and think it's a bit bland, you know?
That's really interesting. What's coming up for me in this conversation is the idea of pushing yourself kind of out of your comfort zone, but also just pushing yourself in general. And it seems like the muscle that you're building ultimately is resourcefulness. Like the ability to make things work even when resources are taken away from you. Do you feel like you are a particularly resourceful person as a result of the years that you've been doing this?
I think it's super important for me to have, and for all creatives, to just have all the resources right with them. I think doing research is rubbed off on me from journalists I've worked with over the years. I think also when a job comes in, you know, when a magazine gets a call to say there's a shoot with Lady Gaga in London and it's going to be kind of on a rooftop, I think they're making a decision about who to put on that job. So do they put Bob onto the job, who's going to get some smoke bombs and get all these amazing colors and put wind machines on the dress and get something super creative, but maybe Bob's not very good at dealing with people. So they might hold off putting Bob on that because they've realized Lady Gaga's only got 20 minutes or whatever. And I know that I get booked for two reasons. Number one, how I am with the talent. So the fact that I won't be starstruck and that I'll be just very polite and pleasant and very come across as being very organized. And also I know I get booked by how quickly I work. And that comes from working in more of a documentary newspaper background. I can get the shot quite quickly. So if you give me 10 minutes with someone, I will get you a magazine cover. I will make it happen within that time. So those two things, how I am with the talent and how quickly I can get the shot, are, I know for a fact, they're reasons why at certain times they'll thumb through the Rolodex and choose Dan Kennedy for that job, as opposed to choosing Bob, who might, you know, make a small pool of water in the studio and have them lying down in it and put some black ink into the water and make them look amazing. Well, that's great if the talent has got enough time to do that, you know. And Dan Kennedy might not give you a result that's as creative as that. But if you've only got 10 minutes with someone, if you put Dan Kennedy on it, you probably have got the best chance of getting a creative result.
Yeah, I love that. And I love how you know what your strengths are. I think it's so important to know why clients book you and to be able to lean into that. Because obviously, you know, when it comes to pitches as well, you can say, well, this is what I do really well. And this is what I'm really confident that I can get. And for the wrong people, that doesn't matter because they're not bothered about getting a shot quickly or whatever. But for the right people, that's so important and will stand you above everybody else, right?
Yeah, totally. I think so. I think that comes with experience, doesn't it? Knowing what your strengths are and accepting those and living with those. And as you exactly as you just said, Matt, being happy to vocalize those. And I have two producers that work with me that deal with the pre-production and the post-production on photo shoots. And they'll often say in the communications with the clients, particularly with people that we haven't worked with before, they'll say, oh, Dan works quite quickly. And not as a sell-in, but just as an example of to let the client know that we're going to be able to get quite a lot of material within a day in that I'm a reasonably fast worker. So yeah, I think it's important. And as you say, the wider notion of knowing what your strengths are and owning them.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to shift gears a little bit and just talk about something that I don't really know if you've got an opinion on or not, but I suspect that you do. And that's AI. And specifically AI around what you just said in terms of the shot, because I just love how your brain works. And I can hear the way that you're describing images, I can almost see how it works and see why you get these incredible shots. My brain doesn't work like that and I can't see things. But one thing that I find is kind of interesting is that how much work goes into getting a shot like that versus somebody who can kind of sit in Photoshop and select a scene and type some stuff into the prompt and then all of a sudden there's balloons and stuff coming out. Like, what do you think is the future of the photography industry in relation to AI?
It's a great question. And I think it's one that's on the minds of every working photographer out there. And I'm sure you've seen, you know, you could take a couple of iPhone pictures, upload them to some form of AI bot and have six versions of a LinkedIn style headshot sent back to you within half a day for $30. You in sports gear, you in a suit, you in the business district of what looks like London, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, these are quite jaw-dropping things to see, really. And it's real food for thought for every creative out there. You know, I think it'll be a while yet that we'll be shooting people on green screen, shooting Keanu Reeves on green screen and dropping late afternoon London into the background. Obviously, a certain amount of comping goes on. I've just done a job in Marrakesh where I was photographing somebody with these amazing table settings. And due to delivery complications, all of the table settings, these dramatic tables with, you know, thousands of candles and glasses and all of these things on them, really visually rich things photographed in front of the backdrop of the sort of jaw-dropping Atlas Mountains in just south of Marrakesh. The subject in question had to fly to San Diego. So I had to photograph the table as a cardboard table with the talent sitting on the wall, basically looking like she was in front of this table. And then she went off to San Diego. And the next day, all the stuff from the table arrived. We had to get exactly back into the same spot and then photograph the table and join the two things together. So we're quite adept at doing comping, as we call it. And so it's been a part of our kind of working method and strategy for certain reasons. These are things we've had to have been doing for quite a few years, and we're pretty adept at doing them. But I think we're a way off yet, because I think let's just run out the door, Keanu Reeves, and go down Dalston High Street and maybe have a coffee and walk. You know, I think that's still possible to do. I think it looks real, and I think it nets some great results. I think where AI will be really prevalent will be in things that are already becoming apparent. So an edit for me with more than one person in it can take quite a long time. Let's say we have three people in a photograph and I've taken 600 clicks of the button because I wanted to make sure that they didn't have their eyes shut or someone within the shot didn't have their eyes shut. We can now use AI to remove all of the shots where someone has their eyes shut, you know, and we can use AI to help caption the shots and keyword and describe items that are in the shots. And I think that's where we're going to see some real support for photography within the arena that I'm working in. So I think that's sort of where we're at right now. And yeah, I think things are moving super quickly. Who knows what the future might hold, but I feel like we're where we are for now and we're sort of okay. You know, if it's Bill Gates for the cover of the New York Times magazine, I think the New York Times magazine, you know, will want him where he is and they will want to have had some creative input into that idea. Or if it's for Bill Gates' book cover, I think there's budget and there's creative ideas. There'll be a creative director that says, hey, listen, we really want Bill Gates sitting on what looks like a concrete chair against a concrete wall. Cool, you had that idea. Awesome. Let's have the chair made by a set builders and let's have some interesting, you know, concrete boulders put in behind and then let's light it with a blue gel kind of light. I think that will still happen for real for a while yet, until we get to the stage of just, you know, getting CGI to generate all that and then just get a clone of Bill Gates and drop him in. I think in other areas of photography that might happen sooner, but I think we've got a while yet, you know.
And do you think there's an experiential part of this as well? Do you think, from your perspective, that there are celebrities who really enjoy having their photo taken and really enjoy the whole process of that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think there really are. And I think often it's a creative collaboration. It might be that the talent says, hey, listen, can I just put this coat on my head, you know, and wear it as if I wanted to stop the rain coming, you know, and actually they laugh their head off with the coat on their head and we turn the wind machine on and it just looks great. Maybe that's the album cover, you know, and it just, it's real and it was just a moment. And after all, photography is just capturing some moments. So if we're kind of lining all our ducks up to capture some great moments, then I think we will carry on doing that. You know, certainly from the celebrities' point of view, they often love to collaborate. And quite a few people who come in front of my lens have a real interest in photography as well. You know, they're interested in how they're posing, how they're portrayed, you know, what's going on within the shot. And they want to meet and collaborate together. And so often the magic dust is actually a joint collaboration between talent and photographer. And so where are we if we're trying to build that in Photoshop in a dimly lit room with strip lights with no windows? I'm not sure we're getting the magic essence, are we? So I don't know if we'll get the same result.
Yeah, absolutely. Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. The people, I'm sure, listening to this will find this conversation fascinating and will want to follow you and connect with you. Where's the best place to do that?
You can see all my recent work on my website, danielkennedy.com. I also mentor a few photographers and there's some information about that on dankennedyacademy.com. Dan Kennedy Photo on Instagram. Most of the time I'm on Instagram.
That's where we get to see all of your glamorous travel photos and the celebrities that you're hanging out with.
Well, some of the time, yeah. I tried to put a few bits of reality in there, like the rainy train journey from the Lake District back to Norfolk via London. You know, there's hopefully some reality in there as well.
Yeah, love it. Amazing. Thank you so much for being a guest. You've been amazing.
Great to talk to you, Matt.
Before you leave, if you found this episode valuable, please hit the subscribe button. Also, if you are a creative business owner doing more than 10K a month, and you want to grow and scale without working longer hours or hiring a massive team, then I have something you may be interested in. We have just developed a tool that will give you a custom growth strategy based on exactly where you are in your business right now. So you can stop consuming lots of random content and trying to figure things out on your own and actually get something personalized to you. You will also receive a free copy of my book and it will point out relevant chapters. If you'd like to take the scorecard, it's totally free. You just have to click the link in the show notes or connect with me on LinkedIn and you will see a link in my bio. Thanks for listening. This is the Creative Courage Podcast.